Let's get an update on the this case that happened in King County. Casey McNerney is the spokesman of the King County Prosecutor's Office. Each week we do a segment called Crime and Punishment. This week the big case in the news involves a 74-year-old Mercer Island resident who was targeted by a couple of people who wanted to steal his identity, steal his money, steal his home, and ended up murdering him. It's a bizarre case, and it began when the victim went online in search of a companion. Here's Casey.
It was this initial meetup through this dating app that even got this person on their radar. And this is a pretty unusual crime. We rarely see a case like this. We do occasionally in different parts of King County, but it's especially rare for Mercer Island. The summary of this case is outlined in the public court docs. What the prosecutor who's handling the case said, you know, in this present case, it appears that the defendants concocted the scheme to kill the victim and then move in on his home, and all while taking over his financial accounts and making extravagant purchases just hours after killing him. And they appear to be using the victim's cell phone after he was murdered to concoct fake conversations between themselves and the victim, likely in hopes that the police would assume that he was still alive. And what prosecutors said to the court is that this cold and calculated manner in which they murdered him and so quickly overtook his finances and his home really requires the high bail of $5 million, which is pretty rare to get to.
Yeah, $5 million. Yeah. So I was trying to figure out how you would get the guy out of his home without a fight. And apparently what they did was manage to inject him with fentanyl. And then they loaded him in the trunk of their car and then realized that he hadn't died. So then they, I'll spare you the details, but they killed him and dumped him out by Cosmopolis somewhere.
Right.
Fortunately, we have cell phones and the cops are able to just track the cell phone signals. Huh?
Right. Those details are what police allege, and we were able to act on it because of the work from Mercer Island Police and others. And what police think was happening was that these defendants were trying to get to the Mexico border to try to make it down there, but were stopped in California. That's why they're down there right now. And the question next is, you know, so what happens with this King County case? How long until they get back here? And it really depends on this week if they fight extradition or not. Eventually, they're expected to come back to King County and face trial here for those multiple charges, including murder and kidnapping. But if they decide to fight the extradition, that could take a longer process. But eventually, we expect to see him back here.
Hearing from King County prosecutor's spokesman, Casey McNerney. And this is the case out of Mercer Island, where a man in his 70s preyed upon, killed. I wanted to ask him whether this was a crime of opportunity. I mean, you know, who does this, right? Is this... did they just happen to pick him at random, or is this the kind of the crime that was premeditated, something that they had planned?
I think what the prosecutors and police investigators would say is it's especially important, even when you are very bright and diligent, to watch out for people who are preying on others on apps, because it's unimaginable for people like me and you to think that somebody could do this. But it's not the first time that we've seen terrible actions come off of dating apps or other apps, and you really never know who's on the other end of that conversation.
Yeah. Did anybody else witness this, or are we strictly, this was strictly due to following cell phone signals that they were caught?
The boyfriend of one of the defendant's daughters was pulled over in California and explained to police that he was trying to get away from them.
And so he was frightened of them too.
That's what police say, yeah. And then outlined some of these details, which was a benefit to the police investigation.
Uh-huh.
And then that led to those parts in the charging documents.
Okay, so you do have a witness besides the cell phones then?
Huh? Well, not necessarily. I'm not sure if it was a witness to the killing, but somebody attesting to what they believe happened or what they heard happened.
Yeah. So the main thing in people's minds, especially if you're elderly, living alone, and searching for companions online, is to be really, really careful, huh?
Really careful. I mean, and that's not to blame the victim.
Not at all. But
I mean, can understand.
You have to understand that it's so easy to fake a personality online.
Absolutely is. And people give it as the benefit of the doubt. You hope that people are as good as the victims are in cases like this, but you never really know who's on the other side. And the hard part here is that the neighbors and the family members of this person who was killed, this is going to turn into one of those stories that people talk about you know, nationally, internationally. It sounds like a Dateline episode, right?
Yeah.
And it's so hard for people who knew him and loved him because he was more than just a person in it. I mean, it sounds like a novel.
I know. And the effect on the family has to be devastating, especially when, you know, you make a call, the person you want to talk to isn't there, you go to the house, there's a strange car in the driveway, there's a strange person hanging around the house. It is terrifying.
Yeah, that kind of eerie feeling where you know that the text message is
coming back.
Something's
gone. And you see a text message supposedly for him, but that's not how he writes.
Right. Yeah, that feels uncomfortable. And then to know the outcome and that gut feeling was right is really disturbing. Yeah.
Casey McNerthy from the King County Prosecutor's Office. Thank you, Casey.
Thanks a lot, Dave. Talk soon.
Dr. Gordon Cohen, MD. A lot of people lift weights to make themselves buff, but what's the effect on the heart?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There was an article published this week in National Geographic, and actually the title of it was What Lifting Weights Does to Your Body and Your Mind. And I thought it was interesting that they would publish an article like this. But the thing that it points out, which I think is really true, that when it comes to thinking about exercise, you know, most people are thinking about the benefits of cardio, you know, things like cycling, running, jogging, walking, or whatever,
yeah.
You know, or even we've talked about it before, getting your steps in, you know, this notion of 5,000 steps a day, 10,000 steps a day, whatever. I mean, these are the things that we think of when we start talking about exercise. But actually, most people don't really think about lifting weights or doing any form of resistance training as a type of exercise. And although, you know, we know that aerobic exercise is certainly very important for optimal health, I think it's also important to prioritize resistance training. And in fact, the CDC actually recommend 75 to 150 minutes every week on aerobic exercise, and importantly, spending at least 2 days a week on muscle strengthening activities.
So what do we mean by resistance training? Give us some examples of what we're talking about.
So, you know, it can be something as dramatic as, you know, lifting free weights and, you know, like you said at the beginning, you know, getting buff. But it can be things that are much more simple, like, you know, using simple dumbbells or barbells at home, or it can be, you know, things like body weight exercises, you know, good old push-ups or good old sit-ups are examples of resistance training. And then, you know, many people use elastic resistance bands, anything that causes your muscles to be used, not just running and exercising your heart. Like, you know, moving your body around, whether it's getting in and out of a chair or climbing upstairs or carrying your groceries or laundry basket or whatever through the house. I mean, those are forms of resistance training as well. However, the notion is that it's something that you're going to do for the purpose of conditioning. And so it's repeated weight-bearing motion that actually causes your muscles to actually adapt to the resistance over time. And when that happens, they become stronger and more resilient.
That it strengthens your bones too, as I understand it, right?
And that's important as we get older, that that as you lift weights, it will actually improve bone health and it improves muscle health. Actually, as we get older, our bones tend to thin out. We, you know, they become less calcified and we develop some degree of, you know, osteopenia or osteoporosis. But we also can develop sarcopenia, meaning that our muscle fibers get smaller or go away. And it starts earlier than most people realize. It actually can start in your 30s or 40s if you're sedentary. So it can be really significant by the time you reach your 60s or 70s. So, you know, if you're doing some sort of repeated muscle motion resistance training, you can actually strengthen your joints, strengthen your bones, and prevent numerous, you know, medical conditions over the course of your life.
Yeah. So start early. And also, bigger muscles burn more calories, right?
That's an important point because it's also important for managing our weight. You know, you're burning calories as long as you're doing cardio. But when you stop, there's only a short period of time after that that you continue to burn calories. And then your metabolic rate drops down to where it was when you started, and there's no ongoing excessive calorie loss. Whereas with weight training, as you build up muscle, the muscle gets bigger and it has an increased metabolic demand. And this is how you actually increase your metabolic rate. And this helps to keep weight down.
And so what about motivating yourself to get started on this? I would think that it's a little easier to get motivated to do weight training than the treadmill, because the treadmill can be pretty boring.
There is probably less boredom associated with it. And I think people, you know, can be more compliant with a resistance training regimen.
The way I keep interested is when I'm in the weight room, I look around for the biggest guy in the room. And then when he leaves, I go to his machine and see if I can lift as much as he did. And if I can, it makes me feel really good about myself.
There you go. Well, in terms of feeling good, I mean, you know, feeling good is a mental thing. And actually, you know, strength training can be really good for your mind and your mental health as well. First of all, it can have a dramatic improvement of your sleep quality. And it's actually been linked to protection against degeneration of certain parts of our brain that are important for learning and memory. But it's also been demonstrated that resistance training can actually impact your hormonal regulation. That helps ward off fatigue and can actually improve your mood. And there is evidence that suggests that strength training and resistance training are also associated with lower rates of depression and anxiety. So spending any amount of time is better than spending none. So people shouldn't be intimidated about it. They shouldn't be worried about it. It's easy to get started. Start somewhere with whatever you feel comfortable with. Look online for some of those resources and, you know, get your body moving.
Dr. Gordon Cohen, MD. Thank you, Dr. Cohen.
Thanks, Dave.
Let's get a check on the economy. A big court settlement has led to some big changes in the real estate industry. For the details, let's go to CBS business analyst Jill Schlesinger.
Well, we had a real estate industry where compensation came under a big question. So last fall, there was a huge lawsuit, and it was brought by a bunch of Missouri home sellers. And they said, hey, wait a second. This is not fair. Why do we have to pay for the buyer's agents? In fact, we believe that the National Association of Realtors has kept the commission structure artificially high so their brokers and agents can make more money, and it comes out of the seller's pocket. Okay, they lost the court case in the fall. At the time, they said, oh, we're going to appeal it. The National Association of Realtors said, we're going to appeal. No one thought they were going to appeal. This was a huge number. It's like an almost $1.8 billion lawsuit. So now on Friday, they announced a $418 million settlement. It's going to end this antitrust lawsuit. And what happens now is, if this settlement is approved by the federal court, starting in July, sellers will no longer have to pay the entire freight for the transaction, and buyers can directly negotiate fees with agents, and that agreement will have to be put in writing. So essentially what this means is we could see commissions come down. In fact, I was looking at a lot of this in the fall, and I had a little file that said real estate settlement. And there are some analysts at one of these big firms. They said the real estate compensation model could get crushed by 30%. 30%. So, you know, by the way, we pay realtors every year $100 billion. So a 30% reduction would be huge.
Well, I don't know what that means. For example, what's the typical annual income for a decent real estate agent?
Well, this is a great question. I happen to look that up. I didn't say decent. I just know. I only know media. I have no judgment on this.
Okay.
So according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, real estate professionals make median wages of around, let's call it 65 or 66 grand a year.
Uh-huh. Well, okay. I mean, that's not exactly a princely sum these days.
Well, right. And let's just say that went to 45,000.
Uh-huh.
And you might be like, for 45 grand a year, I might get another job.
Yeah.
So So the big question is, what's going to happen to this savings in commissions? Who gets to pocket that money? Now, there are some who say, some people are writing headlines in my industry called journalism, which mm-hmm. says the real estate prices are going to come down. I don't buy it. I'm not buying it at all, because if you look at the median price of a home that's sold in this country, $417,700 is the median price. OK, so let's say that means you get a total commission of about 24-25 grand. Right. And if that fee drops by 30%, that means an $8,000 savings somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
OK. Who gets that $8,000? This is a tight real estate market. There's no way that sellers are like, you know what? I'll take $8,000 less. I don't think that's happening. So what I think the real immediate impact is going to be is about, again, the amount of money real estate agents earn. Yeah. We could see the number of the more than 1.5 million real estate agents fall by half.
Wow. We're hearing from CBS business analyst Jill Schlesinger on the settlement reached last week with the National Association of Realtors. And according to Jill, the lower fees as a result of this settlement could mean a drop in the number of active real estate agents in the U.S. who could flee to jobs that pay more.
I spoke to a big realtor. This is one of these dudes who's like in the, you know, U.S. top agents because he happens to be in a high-priced market. And I talked to him and he started smiling. He goes, I don't care about this. Now, I think you do care. I will say, like, if you're the type of person where you're like, I'm in the real estate business off the side of my desk. Like, I do it almost as a side hustle, which a lot of people do. A lot of working parents say, like, this is a great way to make some money. This is a great way to use a sales skill, right? Mm-hmm. And I think some of those people are going to have to make a big decision. But, you know, I do think that longer term, this is an industry that has not yet been disrupted. You know, if I think about the selling of mutual funds, you know, 30, 40 years ago, when someone bought a mutual fund, they would pay an 8.25% commission on that mutual fund. Mm-hmm. Now you can go direct and pay zero.
Yeah.
So that's never happened in the real estate industry. And so I think this is a consumer-friendly development. I really do.
So does this end up reducing overall the cost of housing, which seems to be one of the things driving inflation these days?
Well, I don't know if it will. I really don't. Because, again, what is the biggest problem with our housing market right now? We don't have enough homes for sale.
Yeah.
I guess long term it could, but I'll give you the model again of the advice business, meaning financial advice. You could no longer collect 8.25% commission on selling a mutual fund. You could collect money for managing money for people who didn't want to do it themselves. And you had to shift your services to a more consultative based type of service. Like, I will help you, Dave, figure out how to run your retirement numbers. Mm-hmm. And when you retire from the fabulous Cairo radio career that you've had, I will help you manage your millions and millions and millions of dollars in your 401k. So, you know, it changes from a transaction to a consultation. And that, I think that would be good for real estate, because I don't think that, I think there are a lot of people in the industry who do have a consultative kind of practice, but you're always in the back of your mind thinking, well, should I really take that? Because, you know, are you telling me that that's the best bid? Or are you telling me that because you want to, like, get this house off the market and get paid?
Yeah. So you don't see a lot of people being forced basically to sell their own homes without help.
I don't think so. I think people will always want to have help. Look, I think that there are plenty of people who want the advice on a transaction that is usually the a good lion's share of your net worth, right? And on the other side, you know, do I think that there are people who would like to actually go ahead and get their own, you know, you pay for a lot of things out of pocket, out of closing, but, you know, like, I want to get my own engineer and I want to get my own agent and maybe I want to get my own legal representation. I don't care if I have a lawyer that's is somebody from, say, my mortgage company. I want my own. And people pay up for these services all the time. But, you know, wouldn't it be so cool? This is the model I would like to see. That there's a lot of people who are buying houses and they're just messing around. They want to look. They pay some sort of flat fee. Let me get a flat fee so I can go into MLS, look at stuff, poke around, see what's there, do my research. And maybe I would pay a company like Dave Ross's real estate company. And you say, you know what? Give me $5,000. You have access to all this stuff. I'll generate a purchase and sales agreement for you that you can use and customize as you wish. I will hook you up with a engineer to do the inspection, and I will send nobody to your closing. Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are going to want to do that. Other people are going to be like, I'm going to pay more.
So you could save money if you wanted to do a stripped down version of that kind of transaction.
Sure.
Then you could save money that way.
Absolutely. But, you know, you're right. There's a lot of people who want help. There's a lot of people who want help in a transaction of this size.
CBS business analyst Jill Schlesinger. Thank you, Jill.
Thank you.
Your daily dose of kindness brought to you by Heritage Homecraft. A group of elementary school children in Chelsea, Maine are dressing for success. CBS News correspondent Steve Hartman reports.
Most 8-year-old boys don't get dressed to the nines. To them, suits are for bathing, and formal is a 4-letter word. But James Ramage of Chelsea, Maine loves to dress for third grade success. He started a couple years ago, and at first, the other kids didn't know what to think.
Every time I saw him, I was just like, okay. And I'm like, why is he dressing up?
James knew he stood out.
Did you just decide one day, I don't care what other people are wearing?
I don't need to look like them anymore. I can be who I want to be.
In any school, a decision like that can go a few different ways. You can be accepted for who you are, ostracized for who you aren't, or, in very rare circumstances, you can become a trendsetter.
It just kind of started.
Then more people started to do it.
Because it looked fun, and now people absolutely love it.
Today, once a week, Chelsea Elementary kids put on their finest for Dapper Wednesday. It's not a dress code. It's not because some adult said so. It's because the children chose so.
Nice dresses.
Teacher Dean Paquette was an early adopter and now an avid advocate. Holy cow.
Stop. Look at this. You look awesome.
Being dressed up, kids are different.
It is.
I think it's a self-esteem thing. And then it carries with them all the way through the day.
All right.
The kids agree. Told me they love how it feels.
I'm a little itchy, but it's fine.
Figuratively speaking.
It feels like I'm not a kid anymore.
It made me feel like I was ready for the day.
Feels like I'm like a president.
When James started all this, he had no idea the impact.
What's it like to be a trendsetter?
It just feels so nice.
But he doesn't think every kid should wear suits. Just whatever suits them.
Just wear what they want to wear.
Self-confidence. Always a good look.
Dress like you want to be ready for the day.
Oh, man. I got to identify with this. In seventh grade, my dad decided for some reason that I would have to wear a bow tie to school every day.
Really?
Looking like young Sheldon. And unfortunately, Steve Hartman was not there to turn me into a hero.
Oh. But look how you turned out, Dave.
Look how I turned out.
Look how you turned out.
Bow tie and a book bag.
There you go.
7:48, and now on loan from the Gene Ursula Show, here is G. Scott. So you got real estate on your mind today?
I do. I know you guys just had the expert on. I didn't get a chance to hear what she had to say, but the real estate world is, first of all, is a world that I've always wanted to get into.
Yeah,
but
really?
I didn't have the opportunities to because, you know, life hits you fast. You know, there's just some things that you want to do. I just thought that I could do some real estate because sales was my thing. But this new thing right now with the changes that's going on potentially in the real estate world. And did you guys talk about that recently?
Yeah, I can play a little clip on what Jill Schlesinger sort of summarized this.
I do think that longer term, this is an industry that has not yet been disrupted. You know, if I think about the selling of mutual funds, you know, 30, 40 years ago, when someone bought a mutual fund, they would pay an 8.25% commission on that mutual fund. Mm-hmm. Now you can go direct and pay zero.
Yeah.
So that's never happened in the real estate industry. And so I think this is a consumer-friendly development.
So now you can negotiate commissions and the buyer doesn't always have to, the buyer can pay their own agent instead of the seller having to pay.
No doubt. So let's talk about, I'll give you guys the good and a little bit of the concern that I have with all of this. But like anything, first, anytime there's change, this is why a lot of people don't like change, right? There's going to be some uncomfortable process. There's going to be some that don't like it. First, I'll start off with, I think any type of more transparency, especially in the real estate game, it's very important. But this change could potentially create barriers for those that are first-time home buyers, right? And the reason why I bring that up is this. The seller has home equity, and a lot of these first-time home buyers, they don't really have the money for those paying those commissions right off some. So that is a little bit of a concern. How about VA home buyers? You guys know VA home buyers legally can't pay their agents' commissions. So how's that going to work? So there's questions when it comes to that. Hey, on one hand, I do think that they should decouple commissions when it comes to this, splitting them up. No doubt about that. But I do know, like she said just there, this industry, the real estate industry, has kind of been interesting. It's kind of been the same for years.
Yeah.
And it's been decades and decades of those who weren't allowed to participate in the real estate market, right? Or it was harder for them. And because I'm talking about black and brown home buyers, okay? Mm-hmm. And because of those things, we have some people in this country that don't have access to the capital that others do. So I wonder how this is going to look 20 years down the road. I do believe ultimately this is going to be better. I think it's going to be a little uncomfortable at first.
Well, the internet's changed it a lot. I mean, I remember back when I was buying a home, the only way you knew it was for sale was through the agent. Now you just go online. You can shop for yourself.
The internet has changed everything. Speaking of that, for all the old school folks out here, I'm old school, that with the regular mainstream banks, how come they were only giving us a 1% on our savings? And then all of a sudden, the new banks come out, the internet banking, and they're like, yo, G, come on over here, player. We got 4% on your savings. Yeah. What? 5% on your savings. What? Right. So that's happening. And so then all the big banks are like, well, I guess, we were bailed out, in the recession. So we'll give you maybe 2%, right? All of this internet stuff, all of these changes that are happening are forcing people who have had a monopoly on things to start doing things the right way. So that's all I got.
Well, it sounds like you're cool with it then.
I mean, what I'm really cool with, and I think that I'm really cool with people being more transparent about these topics. And I think when everyone is forced to be really transparent about all of these things, I think that's when good discussions happen. And then you're like, well, wait a minute. I don't know if I should pay that. And I don't know if I agree with that. Because sometimes it just happened. Like cable. How many times you looked at your cable bill and be like, Larry, I thought it was supposed to be 150. Why is it $225 every month?
Oh, Bill, just because of those charges. You know, this the difference.
What's this charge mean? How many times have you looked at your cable bill and not known what the charge meant?
Yep.
That's what I'm talking about. Yep. Why was cable
doing that? Or your airplane tickets or your hotel bill or your rental car. Yeah.
Why was cable doing that? Because they could.
Because they could. That's right.
All right. I'm out.
G. Scott with Ursula Roytine starting at 9 o'clock on Cairo News Radio. Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News, the podcast. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. You can find our podcast weekday mornings right at 9:30.
And if you subscribe, you'll never miss the Daily Dose of Kindness.